TFS is in the cloud today, and we're running it and having some great experiences with it. I think Brian Harry spent some time talking about the lessons we've learned in a session he did earlier this week. I'm going to actually spend the next 45, 50 minutes or so talking to you guys about what the service looks like. How do you rationalize hosted Team Foundation server from Microsoft with on-premises Team Foundation server that you might run yourselves with a Team Foundation server that you might get from one of our hosting partners? And how do we think about things like security and availability and compatibility and stuff like that? And then I'll spend a little time demonstrating to you guys what the service looks like so that you can actually walk out of this session and hopefully go sign up for Team Foundation service and experience it yourself. So let me see a show of hands really quickly to the extent I can see them with the very bright lights here. How many people have used our hosted Team Foundation service already? Okay, so a good number, about half. Now, how many of those had used it before this week when you got to the conference and you had something in your bag? Okay, so kudos to those of you who actually found time after the conference to go and sign up for the service. We'll walk through the process a little bit later on, and I'll give you a quick tour of it. But you'll see you should have something like this in the bag. This was rather hastily put together. I apologize. Somebody forgot to put .com on the end of the URL, so if you didn't figure that out, that's why you were unable to navigate to that website. But we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. And then as far as questions go, I've got some time for questions in the end. This is probably not the best venue for taking questions as we go. Keith, I don't know if he's going to be around to run mics again. I don't know if you guys had the same recollection that I did seeing Keith run around. It felt like the Phil Donahue show. In fact, Keith looks a lot like Phil Donahue. I'm not sure if it's just me.
What does that make you, Doug?
Hey, now, I don't know. I would probably be some sort of criminal who's reformed and giving a talk on hosted Team Foundation server. So really quickly, what we're going to do with the session today, we're going to talk about Team Foundation service and what it is. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about enterprise readiness of hosted Team Foundation server. We're building this product, as I'll talk later on, to mirror the on-premises products, the same kind of capabilities, but enterprises frequently have certain concerns about things like security and scalability and performance and that kind of stuff especially with cloud services, sometimes it's difficult to understand what the story is there. So I'm going to spend a decent amount of time talking to you guys about what we're doing in those areas. And then we'll wrap up with a demo of the Team Foundation service sign-up experience. And if we have time, I'm going to show you guys a preview of the next iteration of the service. We're getting pretty close to pushing a pretty significant update to the service. And I'll show you guys a little bit about what that's going to look like. But I would be remiss if I held this talk without first acknowledging that Team Foundation Server has actually been available in the cloud for a long time, about a couple of years now. The TFS 2010 product that we released, we built it with hosting in mind, and we have a set of hosting partners who are offering Team Foundation Server today. And they offer it in a frequently different style than you'll get from Microsoft, where we're really building a massive scalable service that can have millions of tenants on our service. They frequently offer more of a boutique service. So if you are looking for more customization or sometimes maybe more consulting services helping your team use it, or you want somebody to manage an automated build lab for your team, stuff like that, these hosting partners of ours can offer those kinds of services to you. So if you're interested in having TFS available outside of your corporate firewall or not having to administer it yourselves, I would encourage you guys to look these guys up. And the URL in the lower right-hand corner can help you understand that a little bit more. So fundamentally, though, I've been working on Team Foundation Server for a long time. I think it was 2003 that I hired onto Microsoft and worked on the source control system that we called Hatteras at the time that kind of grew up to be TFS. Did anyone install TFS 2005? Yeah? God bless you. It was not a very good experience. And we've actually really made it a goal of ours to, throughout the releases that we've had since then, to really optimize that. TFS 2008 got a little bit better, but it was really sort of a dot release of Team Foundation Server. In TFS 2010, we really achieved a much better place with installation of TFS. The majority of our customers install TFS today in under 20 minutes, which is certainly a vast improvement over what they had with TFS 2005. But in the cloud, we can actually make this even a whole lot better. And I'll let you break out your stopwatches and time it for me later on when we do the demo and see just how quickly we can get the equivalent of an on-premises Team Foundation server provisioned for us in the cloud. But that kind of gets to fundamentally what we're doing here with the Team Foundation service. It is the same product as Team Foundation Server. It's the same code base, the same feature set that isn't, you know, in the process of moving into the cloud. We're not fully there yet. There's some different things like identity. We can't use your Active Directory users today in the cloud, but we'll talk about the future around that coming up. But fundamentally, it's the same product. It's just a lot easier to get your hands on. You go to a URL, you tell us what you want your server to be called, and you hit create, and we generate it for you. So TFS Preview and Team Foundation Service is just another great way to get Team Foundation Server that you're familiar with today, and it sort of continues what we've been doing over the last few releases with respect to optimizing the experience of getting started with TFS. I think if you take a look at the what we're doing with Team Foundation Service and all the other improvements we've made in the TFS 11 release around getting started and usability of the product and great improvements to the web-based experience, which I'll show you things that we're doing even more later on, I think we've really raise the bar on what our getting started experience is for customers and how easy it is to get your head around TFS. So let's spend a little bit of time talking about what is different between the server and the service, since I'm claiming that it's, you know, the same thing in the cloud. So the fundamental ALM capabilities of Team Foundation Server are the same between the service and the on-premises product. Work item tracking, source control, build, those look the same with the service. The new features that I believe you've already seen this week, probably multiple times, I think Jason showed some screenshots even around agile product and project management, those things are in the cloud and on-premises. And if you were interested in playing with those coming out of this conference, this is the easiest way that you'll get your hands on those and get to experience those things, which are really some great improvements. The test case management story, which we released in Visual Studio 2010 and TFS 2010, all of that works with the cloud from a test case and test execution perspective. Also, our heterogeneous development story, using Team Explorer Everywhere to build applications in Eclipse or to build applications on a Mac or in Linux or another Unix environment or something like that, all of that works with the cloud as well. The setup and administration is better in the cloud than it is on-premises, and I don't want to denigrate what we have with our on-premises setup and administration story, because it really is pretty good, and especially if you go and look at what people are familiar with in other large ALM systems. We've got a pretty nice, smooth administration and setup experience for TFS. But in the cloud, it's even easier. You don't have to deal with setup at all and administration. We handle all of the platform administration for you. And I say we, it's really largely the Azure team does it. My team only has to handle a little slice of it. And then collaboration as well is the other thing that we've really heard from a lot of customers is a great thing about this. The ability for you to access your corporate data from outside of your firewall, the ability for you to collaborate with people from outside of your organization without having to work with your IT team to get them access to your Team Foundation Server, which is frequently firewalled and frequently requires Windows credentials in the Active Directory for your organization. Those things are hard to do, especially in large companies. And if you have the service out in the cloud, all that stuff goes away. Now, we're not totally at parity with the on-premises product in this release, and specifically the lab management, the test lab management stuff that we introduced with TFS 2010. That stuff does not work with the hosted product yet. There's actually sort of two flavors of what you would expect from test lab management in the cloud. One of them is I'm running my lab on-premises, but I'm using TFS in the cloud, and that's probably the most direct parallel to what we have today in the product. But a lot of people are interested in having actually the ability to spin up test machines in the cloud and have not have to actually purchase that hardware. We are aware of both of those scenarios, and we will make both of those scenarios happen in the fullness of time. We're just not quite there yet. SharePoint integration is another thing that we don't have today with the product. So if you are leveraging the SharePoint integration that we have in TFS today, that stuff's not there in the cloud. Doesn't mean that you can't use an on-premises SharePoint server or maybe even a hosted SharePoint server with your TFS. It's just that some of the richness you get around having data from the TFS server surfaced in reports on your SharePoint site, that won't be available to you. The ability to navigate your document library inside of Visual Studio, that wouldn't be available to you. But you can still actually associate your SharePoint portal, just like you could any portal with TFS, by going in and configuring the URL for that, and it gives you some of the goodness of navigating between the TFS experience and your portal experience. And then finally, the data warehouse and reporting stuff is not there yet. And this is probably, I think, the most painful one in my opinion, because the reporting system in TFS is so powerful, and it adds so much value to TFS once you've got that implemented. A lot of what we have in TFS reporting today architecturally doesn't really fit in the cloud. So we're going to have to evolve TFS reporting so that it has a story that will work well with the cloud. And I think when we do that, we'll also be significantly improving the reporting experience overall with TFS so that it's more approachable, so that things like security that you set on your data actually flows all the way through to the reporting system rather than being lost in that transformation from the operational stores into the warehouse. And providing you better extensibility models and report authoring models like OData, and using Power Pivot and tools like that to be able to consume data out of TFS. All of those things are on our roadmap for reporting, and as we do those things, reporting will be lighting up in the cloud. But in the meantime, your reporting story really is export a bunch of data into Excel and create charts and pivot tables on top of that, which I still think is a pretty powerful reporting story. It's what I use 90% of the time when I need to create a report myself. So that's sort of the story about the differences between the two. Let's talk really quickly about security, though. This is one of the things that, in fact, we had a discussion about this before the talk started today, where people are very, they're very concerned about taking their intellectual property and put it out in the cloud. And so our security story for TFS as our Team Foundation service looks like this today. Authentication today, we're using Windows Live ID. That's something that we've actually built on top of the Windows Azure Access Control Services. And ACS gives us the ability to actually accept a much broader set of identities. And over time, we will expand the service to accept a broader set of identities. And that includes everything from going to things that you might consider less secure, like your Facebook ID to log in. You might not be interested in that, but also to things that are more secure, such as using Active Directory Federation services and leveraging your corporate identity for logging into the hosted service. So all those things will come with time. Right now, we use Windows Live ID. On the network, all of the communication is encrypted using HTTPS, so that's pretty standard. People are pretty comfortable with that. I know I purchased a lot of things for Christmas using my credit card across HTTPS, and I don't think twice about it any longer. Perhaps I should. But the network communication is well protected. And then from a data storage perspective, this is something also we were talking about before this the talk started. The data is stored in Windows Azure and in SQL Azure, and those guys are really good at securely storing data. They've got data centers that are very locked down, armed security guards, barbed wire fences. They take hard drives and they shred them when they're done with them, so your data's not leaking out because somebody got a hold of a discarded hard drive. And there's a lot of security that we inherit for free because we built on the Azure platform, and you guys benefit from that as well. Then, beyond that, the artifacts that we store in Azure are locked down, and they're locked down so that only a small group of people can get at these things. We have a team of only 4 people who actually have access to the artifacts that are being stored in the cloud here. Those guys have background checks on them. We make sure that they don't have histories that you would not be proud of taking care of your data. So we spend a lot of time making sure that we are operating the service in a very secure way. You don't have access to your backend data. Sometimes I have customers say, well, can I connect up and write my own reports against my database? It's just a SQL Azure database that you've got up there. And the answer is no, because you don't have credentials to access that data. So we have focused a lot on security, and I think people worry about security with the cloud in general, but Azure's got a lot of stuff in place to make that a better story. And we benefit from that stuff, as well as have focused a lot on security in our own product. Performance is another thing people care a lot about. Right now, we operate the service out of one Azure data center. It's the North Central U.S. data center. It's rumored to be somewhere in the Midwest, although they won't tell me exactly where it is. The plan is, over time, we'll actually move the service out into all of the Azure data centers. And that's something that we'll do as we need to accommodate more scale for the service. Right now, the service has proven to be very scalable in the single data center that we've got it in. But as we need to scale out, we'll move into more data centers. It also will help people benefit from having their data stored more closely to them. And at that point in time, you'll actually be able to specify where would you like your data stored geographically. So you could co-locate it where the majority of your team is, and they can have the best experience accessing it with the lowest latency to their data. Beyond that, though, TFS has always focused a lot on performance over a WAN. We've always had distributed teams using TFS, teams with outsourcing done in the Far East, but the servers are located in the U.S. or in Europe, and scenarios like that. And TFS has always performed pretty well in those scenarios. We've got a caching proxy server that you can install in remote locations. That caching proxy server will also apply here, but frankly, I hear from a lot of customers that they didn't need to operate the proxy server because the performance of TFS across the WAN was good enough for their teams, and it was just one less piece of infrastructure that they had to run. But overall, we've always focused a lot on that. We still do that. We've got a bunch of scale testing that we do, massive burst tests to see, if we have a whole bunch of people hitting the service all at the same time, can we absorb those bursts? Right now, we're getting a lot of adoption after the build conference, but at the same time, we're looking at the CPU on our servers and we're barely touching it. So we've built a very robust and scalable application already, and that will benefit from a performance perspective. We also spend a lot of time, as I put up here, actually executing perf scenarios manually from like China or India and places like that, so that we can experience against the actual production server what it really feels like for people who are remote hitting our servers in the Midwest. And thus far, the experience has been pretty good. We've found some good bugs, and we're fixing those bugs. But overall, we'll continue to focus on that. We have surveyed customers in the past and gotten feedback from them. And one of the things we always ask about is what the performance is. And generally, the answer is, it's good. It's as good as I would expect it to be. It's as good as my on-premises server frequently. It's hard to actually beat the performance of an on-premises server when your data is located thousands of miles away. But we've actually had some people tell us that that's the case, and there might be some database tuning they need to do for their on-premises server in that scenario. But nonetheless, overall, we've had a lot of really positive feedback from customers about the performance. So hopefully performance isn't something that would keep you from looking at the service. Availability. I know Brian Harry spent some time talking about what it means to have an SLA on Tuesday. It was all over our Twitter feed for TFS was Brian's statements around that. I had to actually update my slide after he made some statements there because I had made a statement that our target SLA was 99.9, and as Brian pointed out, no, your target's 100% availability. 99.9% is the floor. That's the least that you can get by with. Right now, the service is free, so there's nothing to give back to you if we were to not meet the SLA. So we still are targeting that 100% availability, and we're realizing thus far about 99.93% availability, which I think, if I can do my math right, that equates to about 30 minutes of downtime every month that you would perceive. But as we mature the service and we get better at it, and then when we eventually actually offer it as a for-pay service and there are financial guarantees, 99.9% will be the floor. And I hope that you'll find that we're performing well above that, close to or at the 100% level. From a redundancy perspective, the same stuff you can do with your on-premises TFS around having multiple application tiers and data redundancy on the back end, all those things are at play as well here. Right now, we've got 5 application tiers that are running the service. We've got SQL Azure on the back end is storing your data on 3 spindles, so it's transparent to you. If one of those drives falls down, they fail over immediately to these other spindles where it's stored, and then they spin up a third replica again of your data. So there's a lot of redundancy there to support the availability. And from a monitoring perspective, we have continuous monitoring from multiple locations throughout the world. We also have a monitoring inside of our data center, which we're hitting every minute. We run a series of about a dozen tests against the server, and if any of those fail, we get alerted and we go and look into what's going on with those. So lots of synthetic transactions happening there. And we're also doing more and more to monitor actually customer databases. We're not running synthetic transactions against customer databases, but we are monitoring the performance that you're having against your customer database and the events that are coming through our system based on your experience so that we can make sure our customers are having the highest availability possible on their data. I really should have got a clicker, I think, for this talk. I keep walking back here. A couple other considerations. There's upgrade. So this is something that people really wonder about. When you're using Team Foundation Service in the cloud, we are in control of the upgrade cycle. In fact, as Jason mentioned, we're trying to get to a point where we could upgrade the server on a daily basis. We're currently upgrading it every Wednesday. So you might notice if you have an account that you might see a notification, or you might see on a Wednesday that the behavior has changed a little bit. But so we do that on a weekly basis currently. But it's supposed to be transparent to you. No downtime is our plan. We're still maturing in that direction, but for the most part, it should be zero downtime upgrades, and you'll just benefit from the new functionality coming along, and your data will get carried along for you as well. If you go ahead and use the service now, and it is go live, so you can use it for real production usage today, at some point in the future when we offer it as a for-pay service, your investment in it will carry forward into that. We'll convert your account into a trial account so you can use the paid service for the trial period, which right now the plan is 30, 60 days, something like that. And then at the end of that, if you decide that you don't want to continue using the hosted service, you'll be able to take your data with you and import that then onto an on-premises Team Foundation server so that the investment you make in Team Foundation service will accrue to on-premises servers that you want. Effectively, that'll look very similar to portability between two on-premises Team Foundation servers, where you can detach your project collection and attach it over to another server. We'll enable the same scenario. From a compatibility perspective, this is just another TFS 11 server, happens to be running in the cloud. All the clients that work with the TFS 11 servers will work with this server. It's pretty much the same client-server protocol. The only real difference is authentication, because we have to authenticate you through LiveID rather than authenticating you against your Windows Active Directory domain. If you're interested in using it, how might you go ahead and look at adopting it? There's kind of two approaches you can take. One is if you have TFS already in place and you want to sort of play with this, you might choose a team that was interested or appropriate for using a hosted service. They might be appropriate because they are a distributed team, or maybe they include people from outside of your organization and they'll benefit from the fact that you don't have to create corporate identities and open up the firewall for them to collaborate in Team Foundation Server. And you could go ahead and spin up a project on Team Foundation Service. Then we'll be able to synchronize, and this is actually a capability that's coming in the spring, but using our Team Foundation integration platform and integration tools, you'll be able to synchronize the hosted service with the on-premises service. So people can work in either environment. You can actually have parts of your team working against an on-premises server and other parts working against the hosted server, and the data will be moved back and forth using that pipe. We have a lot of customers that use that already to share data and move data between on-premises Team Foundation servers today. So it's really the same tool. We have to make some investments to get it ready for this. We actually have people who are already doing this today, but they hacked it together, and I'm not really ready to officially support it. So spring is the time frame for when this scenario will light up. But then the other thing you can do is start fresh using the service. If you have a team, or maybe you don't already have a solution in place and you'd like to use the service, you can do that. And there will eventually be the ability for you to take your on-premises data and import it to the cloud, just as you'll be able to export your cloud data and import it to an on-premises server. So that portability is going to be in place between the server and the cloud. So you got one of these in your bag. And I want to encourage you guys, the right URL is up on the screen here. But go and sign up if you haven't done it already, and take a look at the service. We're going to play with it here in just a second, and I'll show you what that experience looks like. And let us know how it is. We're doing this for feedback. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring up IE and show you what it's like. So I'm going to go to tfspreview.com. And this is our main landing page. This is exactly what should have been on your thing right here. You can watch this really nice friendly video we've got here. It's going to showcase some stuff there, but I'll show you exactly what you need to do to get signed up is we'll click the Create Account button. It's going to ask you for a few things. The sign-up page only accepts Windows Live ID today. So in the future, when we are accepting other identity types, this would be a drop-down where you could pick what you wanted to use. In this case, I'm going to create myself an account, and an account's going to look like a server. I'm going to provide the host name for my account. So Dougin-ALM Summit is something I'm going to make up, and I need an invitation code at this point in time. The invitation code for the ALM Summit is ALM Summit, and I have to accept my terms of service. And somebody, who's got a stopwatch? So what I'm going to do is click a button, and it's going to do the equivalent of setting up Team Foundation Server for me. I want someone to tell me how long it takes. So I'm going to click, and oh, now hold on. I got to log in. I forgot I haven't cached my Live ID credentials yet. Did I get, yes, okay. So, all right, now click. We're timing me? Okay, it's creating my account. And let's hope the server's actually working performantly today. On the back end, my devs tell me this job takes 2 seconds to run. Hey, there we go. Okay. So pretty quickly, I have the equivalent of an on-premises Team Foundation server right there, which is really, you know, a vast improvement over the 20 minutes, which was already a pretty good story for on-premises. Now, you'll see here when I get in, I've got a bunch of information to help me get started. The first thing is my account URL. You want to bookmark that. We did not send you an email as part of that sign-up process. We're going to do that eventually, but email notifications is something that's coming. We don't have the capability to do it quite yet, but we have a lot of customers who sign up and then they forget their URL and then they come back to us and we have to go look it up for them, and that's more pain than it should be, so I'm sorry about that. But if you just hold on to your URL, you won't get into that particular problem. And then one of the first things I do with TFS is create a team project, which I can do right here, and we'll walk through that in a second. But before that, there's a link to download software here. This is going to take me out to a blog post that we put together that talks through all of the various clients you can use with the hosted service. We have a compatibility patch for Visual Studio 2010 that you can install, and that will allow you to work from Visual Studio 2010 with this. If you have the Visual Studio 11 developer preview that was given out at the Build conference and made available for download at that time frame, you can use that, although that's not a go-live environment, so we don't encourage you to use that for production coding. We can't support it and patch it. If you want using Eclipse, we've got a Team Explorer Everywhere developer preview that you can use as well. And then there's the software for setting up the Build server, and yeah, I already covered Visual Studio 11 preview. So anyways, there's several packages down there that, depending on your scenario, you might want to access. And all those things are accessible from the download software link. There's also out here a set of video tutorials. It would be great to sort of teach your team about the product and what's coming there. And that's a good resource to leverage. Make a suggestion. We are doing this preview. We give it away for free. It's all because we want to hear from customers about how it's working for them. So I hope that you'll sign up. I hope you'll leverage this link and share feedback with us. We've got a user voice site where we are listening and trying to hear what the community is telling us so that we can make sure that TFS and Team Foundation Service are the best products they can possibly be. Then there's help, and this invite others link is interesting. So we put sort of this social viral code thing in here. So the idea being that only the people here know about this ALM Summit thing. Like, you guys are special, okay? In fact, this can only be redeemed a certain number of times. I forget what number we set, but we counted how many people were coming to the ALM Summit, and we set it there. So if all of you redeem your code, then nobody else would be able to use this. If one person doesn't, and then one person outside of the summit can do it. But you don't need to share that code, because you can click on this link right here, and we'll create you your own code that you can give to 5 of your friends, and then your friends can sign up, and they will thank you for it. This could be your Christmas present to your colleagues this year. Wouldn't that be exciting? Print it up on nice stationery and include it in the Christmas card with a picture of your children. And then they can do it again. You know, if you get your Christmas cards out early, they can do it for 5 of their friends. It's this viral thing, and it grows, it compounds, I guess. So anyways, that's something to keep in mind. But let's look at this create team project thing. So today, with the on-premises product in TFS 2010 and with the on-premises product in TFS 11, team projects are created inside of Visual Studio. But with the hosted service, team projects are created through the browser. And this is something that we will eventually make possible inside of the on-premises product, but it doesn't have the full functionality that the on-premises product can do. So, for example, NetSec SharePoint, which we talked about, isn't part of this. So, anyways, I'll make myself a project called Tailspin Toys, and I can pick my process template. There are three process templates out here. I'll stick with the Scrum one and click Create Project. And this is going to have to process. It takes about a minute for this to happen. So I'll take that minute, and I'll talk a little bit about customization, because a lot of you, how many people have customized Team Foundation service process templates in your environment, or Team Foundation server process templates? Great. So we don't actually support customization yet with Team Foundation service. And the reason for this is, how many of you upgraded to TFS 2010 and then had to go in and figure out how to retrofit all your team projects with test case management work item types and stuff like that? And that was about as much fun as installing TFS 2005 was. So we want to provide a better story. We actually want to make sure that when we upgrade the server from release to release, we can introduce features for you into the team projects that you've already created, so you don't have to go through that pain. And we actually feel that there's more of an onus on us with the service, even more so than there is with the on-premises product, where we keep that kind of administration away from customers. So we are investing in some tooling and some automation that will be able to upgrade the hosted team projects with new features as new features come online. And until that automation is ready, we don't want you guys customizing the process templates, because our plan with an upgrade that needs to touch the process template is just to overwrite the current process template. And if you customized it, it would have been overwritten. Your customizations would have been lost. You might be upset with us. But fundamentally, all of the process customization that you know about on-premises and the ability to upload custom process templates, all of that stuff is going to be in the cloud, and it's coming in the fullness of time. And it's something that we are actively working on enabling. So you will be able to do those things even though you can't in the preview currently. And you know, here I am. I thought I would talk long enough about customization that this progress bar would have been completed. And it's not really moving very quickly there, is it? This job generally takes a minute to run, and it's actually one of the areas that is pretty close to the top of the backlog for improvement, because consistency, and sometimes it I've seen it take 10 minutes. Let's hope that doesn't happen here. I'll take a question. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so the question, to repeat it for the audience, is that he tried to create an account last night, and the name he wanted for his virtual server had already been taken, and it was his company's name, so he's assuming it was somebody from the company, maybe even himself, who had already used this. So a couple things. First off, a given live ID can only create one, so if you did create it, you wouldn't be able to create another one even. But secondly, you have to work through me to actually have us go and look at that account. And if you give me your live ID, we actually have a tool internally that we're using, because enough people have lost their account URLs that we have a tool we can go in now and put the live ID in, and we can figure out what it is for you. So let's talk after the talk, and I'll give you my email address, and you can send me your live ID, and I'll have the support guys look it up for you. Okay, so we're done. Thank you. That was a very timely question. That was wonderful. Okay, so here we are. We've got a team project created now. I can just click on this link, and it's going to take me to the team project homepage. Have you guys seen this in other talks, the new web experience for TFS? I'll give you just a really quick highlight of what it looks like. So first off, I created a team project called Tailspin Toys. We have a new concept in TFS called a team. So you can take a team project, and you can define sub-teams within that team project. And we gave you a default one here that was called My Team. And that's the context that we're looking in right now. So we can access, for example, the product backlog for My Team by clicking on the backlog link here. And this is where you've probably seen the experience around managing agile backlogs and whatnot, and the ability to say, you know, here's do this feature, do that feature, do another feature. This is my clever sample data that you can go in and you can actually define what's on your product backlog, and you can allocate it to your sprints so that when you are going in and executing sprints, you can appropriately break down those things and manage them through these tools. So it's a great experience that's in the next version of TFS, and it's in the TFS preview. And if you'd like to play with it, TFS preview is the easiest way that you can get your hands on it. Same thing, you can access your work items. Source control, we've spent some time building a decent source control experience in here, so you can go in and look, browse your repository, you can look at the source history. You can't do check-in, check-out through a browser. We still haven't figured out how to make that make sense, but you can look at history, you can diff files, all that kind of stuff. And if I had a build server set up, which I don't here, but I've got one in another account I'll show you in a little bit, I'd have the ability to go in and review my builds and queue builds and that kind of stuff. So across the top, there's some other stuff. So feedback and support. Support, if you have questions, this will take you to MSDN forums. We've got Microsoft support personnel who monitor these, are dedicated to watching the forum. And they're actually quite bored because they're not getting nearly as many support tickets as we anticipated. So they would love to hear from you. If you need support, I would encourage you to leverage them. Administration will get me into the place where I can do my account administration. I'll talk about it in a second. But over here, you can see my name. And I did my demo in practice, so pretend that I didn't just do that. And my name is actually, well, it's not doing what I thought it would do. Anyways, my name is supposed to be dtneumann@hotmail.com because Hotmail doesn't give us your Hotmail information or anything like that. It just tells us that you logged in effectively with Hotmail. So we don't know who you are until you come in here and you do things like customize your display name. So you can come in here and make it be something really clever and funny. We have people on the team who are customizing their display names. And what they like to do is put like Cyrillic characters and Turkish characters in. And it really throws some of the pre-releases for a loop sometime. I'm sure that will work just fine for you. They're just smart Alex. So I can also upload a photo. And this is a photo I have of myself. And then I'm going to have this picture in here that people, and when I create work items and edit work items, they're going to see who I am and have a little bit more of a personal experience. All this stuff's in the on-premises TFS as well. There's some stuff that you can set around locale. Currently, the service is only in English, but we're looking in the spring time frame to add the additional languages. It's just a matter of getting the localization process completed, and generally we don't like to localize the text until the text is pretty close to being stable. So that stuff should happen in the springtime. You'll start seeing it show up in different languages in the service, and individual users will get to pick what language they want to see, and the strings, the resources that are in the application will show up in that language. But the text, obviously, that people type into your work items is going to be in whatever language they type that in. The fields on your work items are going to be in whatever language the process template was created in. So you could end up in scenarios where you have mixed language in the UI if you've picked a different language for your own stuff from how the product was set up. So one of the first things that people generally want to do is to go in and add users to their account. So I'm going to go in, and I'm actually in the wrong context here. I'll go into administration. And the way that you add a user to TFS on premises is that you add them, you grant them some level of security access to the system. And that is the same with the TFS preview. There's no explicit, I'm going to add this user to the account, that is separate from the I'm going to grant this user some permission experience. So the easiest way to generally do this is just to go in and modify for your team project the contributors group. So I can go in here and add a member, and then I add members one of two ways. I can type a display name, and if the user is already known to the system and we understand their display name, then we will recognize it. So I could type my own name in here because I'm already known to the system, and I could add myself to the contributor group. I think I'm already a member. Or I could add somebody with an email address. And we'll do it like that. So I'll add Bill Gates, okay? And that doesn't actually send an email to Bill Gates, luckily, because I've done this demo enough time, he would be really annoyed with me by now. But what happens is it waits for somebody to come and log in with an email claim from Windows Live that says that they are Bill Gates at Microsoft.com. So at that point in time, we recognize the claim that came through the authentication process with Windows Live. We marry that user up with the credentials that you just provided right there. And from that point forward, that Live ID user is now granted access to Team Foundation Server. So generally, you'd want to go in here and add a few users. And then you'd separately need to inform them of how of the fact that you had added them, the email address that you added them with. You probably needed to ask them for their Live ID, actually, so that you could put that in there appropriately. You'll need to let them know the URL for the server so that they can go and connect to it. We're working to improve that experience. I actually think we will probably move to a model where when you specify an email address, it doesn't have to be the Live ID, but we will send an email to that user, and then that user clicks on a link in that email to come back to us, and they log in then with their Live ID. At that point in time, we'll associate their Live ID with the account. But for now, you need to worry about communicating that to your users. So that's kind of the web experience. The next thing that you probably want to do is actually connect from TFS, or from Visual Studio. And so the experience is the same as connecting to an on-premises Team Foundation server. I'm going to come in here. I'll see that my Dugin-ALM Summit account is not listed there. So I need to add a server, and I will do it with the full URL here. I can type correctly, and I guess I could have just copied and pasted that. Let me make sure I got the name right. Dugin-ALM Summit. Okay, I think that looks right. And click OK. And if you don't type the full URL, you have to play with all those other things on that dialog, like change the protocol to HTTPS and change the port to port 80 because we don't listen on port 8080 in the cloud. And you don't need the /TFS, so you can delete that stuff. So the easiest thing to do is just to type the URL. That's another place where we've gotten some feedback we should focus on improving. So here I am going in, and it's connected to my server. And I can go ahead and connect up. And now I could go in and I could, for example, take a look at the work items. And I don't know if my product backlog will actually show the things we entered. They do. So here are those work items that we just created and whatnot. So in general, one of the first things you want to do when you're playing with a product is let's just check some source in. And I'm going to do the same things I would do on premises of create a workspace. And I'll create a folder there and download the files. And then I went ahead and created a little bit of source code that we can just drag and drop in here, if I can figure out how to do drag and drop. And this is the same experience that you have on premises, but I'm getting to the fact that I can go ahead and check it in. Let me go ahead and change pending change. We changed the whole Team Explorer, and I'm still stuck in my ways at times. So check in that. I could associate with work items, done all that. The same stuff you do on premises. Okay, I have some code in place, and that gets me to the last thing I really want to show you in the getting started experience, which is how to actually set up an automated build, because I'm very passionate about automated builds. I hope you are all doing them. And we have a story today where your server's in the cloud, but your builds are going to run on premises. So you actually need to download and install the build server software. That build server software is part of the Team Foundation server installation. So you'll need to actually download the on-premises Team Foundation server install and install it to get to this, even though you're going to use Team Foundation server in the cloud. I know that's not entirely intuitive at times. So I've got that installed already, and I'm going to go through the configuration process just for the build service because I don't need to configure a Team Foundation server. And this is an experience that's going to look very similar to what you're used to today. We'll go in and pick our server here. There's only one collection, Team Project Collection, in the Team Foundation service accounts. So you'll see it, but you'll never have a chance to actually create more until we actually add that capability, which is something that's on the backlog, but it's not terribly high on the backlog. I'm going to walk through the process here, set up with all the defaults, and I got an error. And oh my gosh, You know, I did this demo at the Build conference, and I got the same thing where a software update has been pushed down to my system, and it won't let me actually configure the build server until the software update's applied. And I rebooted this morning, so that I got it at a very inopportune time. Nonetheless, let's pretend that that worked. If that had worked, which you don't want to watch me reboot, I know, you know, next time I just have to reboot right before my session, I guess. I would be able to go in here and define an automated build, and it would look like the same thing. And the build would run on premises, even though my service is in the cloud. Now, we get feedback a lot here. Are you going to make builds run in the cloud? And yeah, eventually we will make builds run in the cloud. But that's only going to satisfy a subset of customers, because there are things that frequently you want to do in your build that might require access to other resources on premises, such as if you wanted to run some tests as part of your build and they needed to be able to talk to a database that you had set up on premises or something like that. Also, when we run builds in the cloud, we'll only have certain tools available on the build servers we run in the cloud. And if you need a tool installed on the build server, we won't actually have the ability to do that because, what will happen is you'll have to let us know, hey, we would like to have this tool on the build server. And then over time, we'll say, okay, we can perhaps grow the tool set that we have on the build server. Or you can check it into source control and you'll be able to sync it onto the build server. Or use something like NuGet to actually install it on the build server as part of your build process. But fundamentally, there might be scenarios where you want to run something during your build that we don't have access to in the cloud, and therefore you would want to run it on premises. So that's sort of the thinking around build in the cloud versus build on premises. We took build on premises as the first step. So since the build thing isn't going to work for us, I'm going to wrap up here. I got about 4 more minutes. And I want to walk you guys through a little bit of what the new web experience looks like. And this is going to get deployed in the next few weeks. So if you have a TFS preview account, this will just light up all of a sudden. And we've focused on trying to improve the navigation experience for the web experience. What we had before is pretty stark. And I think the lack of structure at times has made it challenging for people to understand that, you know, those things at the top behave like tabs, and this, you know, other things are breadcrumbs and that kind of stuff. We've also added this some visualization, added some more value to the main page that you land on here. So you can go in and you can define work item queries that your team treats as favorites, and we'll put a tile on here and tell you how many work items are in that. So you could have the P0 bug query up there, and every time you log in, you'd be able to see that the team has, you know, more than 0 P0 bugs, which is never a good thing. You also can pin your builds to that, as well as if you want to keep track of changes that are happening in source control, you can pin a folder in source control, and then we'll run the history query to determine what changes have happened recently in that. But really, the biggest thing that's changed is we've tried to make it easier for you to do some of the fundamental things like adding users to your account. Before, you guys saw I had to like jump into administration mode, and then I had to change context into my team project, and then I had to find the groups, and then I had to go add a user to a group. It wasn't really all that intuitive about how I would add somebody to the system. We've improved that by just putting a manage members link directly on here. I can come in and I will add Steve Ballmer this time. I don't think he really reads his mail, so I'm not sure. I think he has people that do that for him. Anyways, so I can go in and add users in a much more intuitive manner. I also can go in and configure things like my sprints and whatnot much more easily than I could do in the past. All that stuff is more accessible. So we focused a lot on the getting started experience, and that's going to be coming in the next few months. So, and with that, I'm 1 minute short of my deadline that Phil Donahue asked me to respect. So I'm happy to take some questions if you guys have any questions. Otherwise, I'll be up here, and you can come ask me one-on-one. I saw a hand over here.
No, wait, I got a mic.
Oh, here
it comes. I'm
going
to have to beat on somebody if they shout something out without a mic.
Ah, thank you, Keith.
Okay.
Hi, I have a question. How about what's your plans with licensing? Licensing will be per user, per instance, per something. What
right.
about bandwidth for Azure for
yeah.
transferring?
So we don't have an official statement on when it's going to be a four fee service and on what the licensing structure is going to look like. We will announce those things with plenty of advance notice. But what I would say is that we know people don't really want to be charged for things they can't really understand, like bandwidth or data storage or anything like that. So it will be a model that you, as a consumer of the service, will be able to predict what is actually going to be your cost for using the service. So if that helps out with answer the question, I'm sorry I don't have more specifics to share with you on that.
Doug, another one here.
Yes.
If we were to use your service and then then port it to an on-premises service mm-hmm. later, how do we convert the Windows Live ID to our own Active Directory ID?
Yeah, so it's a great question that we have not actually done the time to design that, but we would probably have to provide some user experience. So first off, if you were using ADFS when we enable that, then we would already understand your users and we would be able to marry those up. But if you weren't, then we'd have to provide some user experience whereby you say, this Live ID is actually this person in the Active Directory. Go ahead and fix up all the identity related to that.
Can I use my Office 365 account to log in?
Can you use your Office 365 account to log in? So that's another great question. So Office 365 uses its own username and password store. We call it OrgID internally. And that is on our roadmap that you would be able to use that. There's actually a lot happening within Microsoft to try to unify the different identity systems that we have today to have a common solution that you would be able to establish an account with a service like Office 365, and then that same user identity is going to be leveraged throughout the services such as Azure and TFS and that kind of stuff. Getting that unification to happen is going to take some time, but eventually when that happens, yes, you will be able to use your Office 365 account.
If I have used my AD accounts to create the Live accounts, will they map more closely?
If your Live ID's name, which looks like an email address, maps to the email address for your users in Active Directory, I suppose we could be that smart and do that. That would seem to make a lot of sense. We haven't built any tool for mapping that stuff yet. We haven't even started to think about what it would look like, but that's a great idea.
Okay, right back there.
Yeah, would.
In one of the slides, you said that it would support in the future Facebook ID and
yep.
I think it was Google ID. Is that using OpenID or?
It uses Azure's Access Control Services. And Access Control Services is a service that will federate multiple different identity systems. So it will support OpenID identity systems. Facebook uses a different thing. It's not OpenID. But ACS abstracts us from those details. And you can build your own apps on top of Azure Access Control Services as well if you would like to support Facebook login. The other thing is you'll be able to turn that off. Like if you don't want your users to sign in with Facebook, then you'll be able to say that I don't trust Facebook identity. So you'll have control over your tenant, what kind of identities you'll accept there.
You've said in the future that you will integrate into SharePoint. Mm-hmm. With the Office 365 SharePoint, is there any time frame of when that might be integrated?
No, I don't have any time frame to announce on that. I will tell you that we are focused very much on Dev 11 right now, and we haven't spent any time really focusing on how we'll do that problem. So that gives you any insight into the time frame. Yeah.
So it sounds like the goal is to, over time, pretty much make service and server comparable, offer the same functionality?
Very much so, yes.
So from a long-term perspective, will there always be two offerings?
So certainly we are not looking at walking away from on-premises software anytime. So there will always be two offerings. I say always. Always is kind of a strong word. But for the foreseeable future, I don't see any world where there aren't two offerings.
So I have a security question. I know you mentioned HTTPS, but the data at rest, either you or Azure are doing any type of disk encryption or data at rest encryption?
Right. So we are not doing any sort of data at rest encryption. We're trusting the security and ACLing systems that we've built into our product and that Azure has built into their product to make sure that those things are secure. And you know, thus far, I'm trying to think about, you know, I think bugs are the scenarios where those things might not be sufficient. But I don't know of any issues that anybody's seen in the platform on those kinds of issues.
Okay, Doug?
Yes, thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, guys.